I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. I hope you enjoyed the series on cancer, and I hope you learned from my guest. I will revisit cancer again in the future to update information on this rapidly changing field of medicine and health. I also plan to devote at least one blog on my website at www.holistichealthshow.com every 2 weeks to update on cancer research. Tonight we start a series on arthritis. This is another common health problem among people in the United States. I'm happy to have Dr. Nathan Way to open this series and present an overview of the field of arthritis. Dr. Way is a nationally known arthritis expert and consultant, a board-certified rheumatologist, and clinical director of the nationally respected Arthritis and Osteoporosis Center of Maryland, where he has helped provide relief for over 7,000 patients with arthritis. He is also a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, and has served as a consultant to the arthritis branch of the National Institutes of Health. He is a fellow of the American College of Rheumatology and the American College of Physicians. He received his education at Swarthmore College, Jefferson Medical College, the University of Michigan Medical Center, and the National Institutes of Health. During his career, Dr. Way has authored more than 60 peer-reviewed literatures, 500 published articles, has produced 13 videotape presentations, presented over 120 lectures worldwide, and has taught advanced courses in rheumatology, so I am happy to have him open this series. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Nathan, and I look forward to hearing much more about arthritis, the symptoms, the treatments, and all that a good overview of arthritis for the listeners. First, what is arthritis?
Well, Carl, you know, the term arthritis is actually a word that's derived from the Greek. And it refers to more than 100 different conditions.
Oh.
Most of them, of course, causing joint symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what kind of symptoms, then, do people have?
Well, obviously, the types of symptoms that bring patients to see me are generally pain, stiffness, aching. But there are other symptoms that people may not recognize as being related to arthritis, and they include fatigue, weight loss, low-grade fevers, rashes, mouth sores. So these are some things that people may not exactly equate to arthritis.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard people say something like, well, I'm just going to wait and see what happens. It usually gets better, and so I usually don't worry very much about things like this. And is this a wise thing for people to do?
Actually, no. And there are three major reasons why that's not a good idea. The first, of course, is some forms of arthritis can actually be life-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
They can be that dangerous. So obviously you don't want to put something like that off.
Mm-hmm.
The second reason is that most forms of arthritis today are very treatable. So it's important to get treated early because the prognosis is much better with early treatment. And finally, the third reason is that if you wait and damage is done,
mm-hmm.
you really can't reverse that damage. And so I think those three reasons are sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Now, doesn't this mainly affect older people?
You know, that's really a myth that a lot of people have from, you know, maybe seeing their grandparents and saying, well, you know, this has got to be an old person's disease. But it's actually not. In fact, I know this from personal experience. I have a sister who developed rheumatoid arthritis, a very severe form of the disease, at the age of about 34. One of my kids developed arthritis at the age of 10. But, you know, the ending of the story, though, is good, because with the medications that we have nowadays, you know, both my sister and my son are doing extremely well. But, you know, arthritis does affect young people. It can even affect infants.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there are two major types of arthritis, osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. And what is the difference in these types?
Yeah, those are the two most common types, and they're immensely different. And actually, by telling you the differences, that sort of will give you an idea as to the types of problems that we face when we treat arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis is less common than osteoarthritis, and rheumatoid arthritis affects maybe 2 million Americans, and it's an autoimmune disease, meaning the body's immune function just goes haywire. And as a result, you know, multiple joints are attacked, but more importantly, internal organs are also affected. So patients with rheumatoid arthritis can develop heart disease, lung disease. Their mortality rate, in other words, the rate at which patients with rheumatoid arthritis die, is much higher. In fact, they die 10 to 15 years earlier than patients without rheumatoid arthritis. On the other hand, osteoarthritis, which is much more common, affecting maybe, you know, 30 to 40 million Americans, is more of a wear and tear type of disease. That's where the cartilage at the ends of long bones begins to wear away. And this usually affects weight-bearing areas, the neck, low back, hips, knees, maybe the base of the thumbs. And osteoarthritis is the type of arthritis that people most often associate with getting older.
And when people come to you, how do you go about diagnosing arthritis?
Well, the most important tools that we have, despite all the high-tech stuff that's available, are still a good history and physical examination. You know, there's just no substitute. And the history oftentimes will give us clues as to the diagnosis, and the exam will as well. And then we use the laboratory, different blood tests to help confirm our suspicions. We use different types of imaging techniques. X-ray is probably not the imaging technique of choice anymore because it takes so long for changes to develop with arthritis. We're using things like ultrasound and MRI earlier and earlier. So that combination of the history, the physical, laboratory studies, and imaging studies will generally give us the diagnosis.
Then, Nathan, what are some of the treatments that are available for arthritis?
Well, before going into specific types of treatment, let me mention just what some of the goals are. They're to relieve pain and inflammation, improve quality of life, slow down disease progression, control comorbidity, meaning people with arthritis oftentimes have other diseases, you know, hypertension, diabetes, and things like that. And so it's important to factor in those conditions when we're treating. And finally, we need to minimize the risks of therapy because, you know, let's face it, the medications we use oftentimes have side effects. So when we treat patients with arthritis, we start with non-medication types of treatments first. And they include things like social support, education, weight loss. I mean, you know, if a person comes to me and they say, you know, Dr. Wei, my knees are killing me, and I look at her and she weighs 450 pounds, I can give her any medicine in the world and it's not going to work.
Right.
So things like that, assistive devices, exercise, and maybe modification of lifestyle. So we start with those things. And then we move on to medications, which can include things like analgesics, which are pain-relieving medicines, anti-inflammatory medications, disease-modifying medications, which actually helps slow the disease process down, and finally, remission-inducing medications.
And what if someone like me wants to avoid the harmful chemicals and drugs? what would you offer me?
Well, I think a lot depends on the severity of disease. For many patients, natural supplements will oftentimes be quite helpful. Things such as glucosamine and chondroitin, different anti-inflammatory herbal remedies. There was a recent study done which showed that an old Chinese herb called thundergod vine, given in small amounts, actually helped people with rheumatoid arthritis as much as one of the stronger disease-modifying drugs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, certain types of herbal remedies will work. Again, I think that it's important to focus initially on non-medication types of treatments.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that we'll often start with.
Mm-hmm. And in a similar vein, what are some alternative therapies that you might recommend?
Well, the list is pretty long there. You know, I think that, unfortunately, if you look at the scientific literature, they tend to study things to death, and they don't really understand often. You know, and I'm talking about the medical establishment, conventional medicine. They don't seem to understand that individual patients will respond to individual types of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all different. You know, we're all human beings, and what makes you, Carl Helvey, and me, Nathan
mm-hmm.
Way,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're unique individuals. So it's important to individualize treatment. So
mm-hmm.
things such as chiropractic, acupuncture, I've already referred to herbal remedies and different types of supplements, music therapy, yoga, massage. I think they all have their place, and I think that each patient, each person needs to find the correct mix for them. And you know, a physician who listens and who is sort of attuned to this can help them find their way.
Mm-hmm. And are there new therapies available in arthritis besides the stem cell, which we're going to get to?
Well, I think the most exciting area, well, maybe not the most exciting, but certainly one of the more exciting areas, particularly when it comes to severe types of arthritis like rheumatoid disease, are the biologic remedies. And the reason I say that is that before we used very toxic medications in sort of a shotgun approach. So, yes, we sometimes got patients feeling better, but at what cost in terms of side effects? With the biologic remedies, we're able to actually hone in on the immune system defect, sort of like using a laser beam.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that has been very helpful for getting people who have severe rheumatoid arthritis into remission.
Mm-hmm. Then, Nathan, you're recognized as an expert in the use of platelet-rich plasma and also stem cells. And this is a topic that I think a lot of people are interested in right now. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah, and this is sort of my passion. For years, you know, and I've been in practice now almost 30 years, my background in training was as a conventional scientist at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. And
mm-hmm.
So I was well-versed in the science of arthritis, but what always bothered me was that we didn't have and weren't harnessing the body's natural healing potential. When you were a kid and you cut yourself, you know, you healed.
Mm-hmm.
You healed that cut pretty quickly. You cut an earthworm in half, and you know what happens? They regenerate that other half. So why does this happen? And you know, the reason that it happens is because this healing potential, as we grow older, as we become adults and grow on into more mature adults, that source of natural healing power is sort of hidden away.
Mm-hmm.
It's hidden away in our bone marrow in the form of stem cells. And what stem cells are, they're pluripotential cells. And what I mean by that is that a stem cell is a cell that has not yet become a specific tissue or organ.
Mm-hmm.
But it has the capability of doing that, given the right circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So these stem cells are located in our bone marrow. If we're able to get them out, concentrate them, put them next to a tissue that requires repair, and then add the right environment to mm-hmm. the stem cells, then what we get is actual tissue regeneration. So for conditions such as tendinosis, you know, tendon tears, osteoarthritis where the cartilage is worn away, we're actually regenerating cartilage and regenerating tendon tissue. And that's so exciting because, you know, you can take a person's own stem cells, use their own platelet-rich plasma, which we get from their own blood, their own blood. So these are as natural as you can get. I mean, these are yours. And by creating the right environment, adding the right ingredients, we're building, we're essentially creating and healing in as natural a fashion as possible.
Now, these are minimal invasive procedures?
Absolutely. Done under local anesthetic, people are absolutely amazed at how little discomfort they have.
And how long would a person be, how long before they'd be able to use, like, say they had something done with their knee, how long would they need to stay off their legs?
We generally advise, you know, non-weight-bearing, you know, maybe with the assistance of crutches or something like that for about 3 or 4 days. And, you know, if a patient has a deformity, in other words, if they've had a lot of cartilage wear, we may have them wear a brace for a little bit longer, a few weeks, then we have them start physical therapy. But generally, by the time we see them at about a month or so, a month or two, they're doing pretty well. Their patients are walking. We've actually been able to measure cartilage thickness, both before the procedure and at 6 months, and now we're at a year for actually five patients, and we're that's close to 8 patients. We're seeing cartilage regrowth in all these people, and it's wonderful.
Do you have any hint about how long that cartilage will last?
You know, we don't know yet. You know, we're hoping that we're getting at least 5 to 10 years and possibly longer than that. Because it's so minimally invasive, it can be repeated. But we may be surprised. We may get people going longer. We just don't know yet.
I think it's very exciting. I like the idea. I'm very interested in the homeless and the low-income populations, and I've worked a lot with them. What is available for that population who has minimal amount of money, often does not have insurance? And if they need care for arthritis, what is available?
Well, I think there are a number of avenues that are open, and people oftentimes don't exploit these avenues. The first is that if they do have a doctor they see, doctors still get samples. And most doctors are more than willing to give patients samples, and that's one method of doing it. In addition to the samples, oftentimes physicians will be given coupons and vouchers for medications which they can dispense to their patients. The second avenue is many of the companies that make these medications have patient assistance programs. So if a person is truly destitute or has insurance issues, oftentimes these patient assistance programs will provide free medication to patients. And finally, the third avenue is one where I'm actively involved, and that's clinical research, because patient volunteers, when they elect to enter a clinical research study, will receive not only their medication free, but all their study-related expenses. You know, that includes blood tests and x-rays and things like that. And beyond the benefit of getting those free, sometimes, and this happens maybe 5 to 10 times a year, we'll identify a serious medical problem during the screening process. Because in order to get into a study, you know, we screen patients with these different tests. And we'll, you know, we've picked up on serious heart ailments that a patient didn't realize they had. I had a patient last year who had what's called an aortic aneurysm. That's a ballooning out of the major artery from the heart, and he had to have emergency surgery that evening. And, you know, he essentially had his life saved. So, you know, that's definitely a perk.
Right. One program we have in the state of Virginia, I think we still have it, and we had it when I had my homeless health care program is where the state takes all of the free medications, like one company may provide insulin because they have the patent on that, and another company may provide something else, and it's too time-consuming for private practitioners to handle all of this. So the state has an office that handles this, and so we could apply to the state for the medications that we needed for our homeless population, and it usually would take a month to get established. And so I would use the money from my grant for that first month, and then by the second month we were able to have them on the state program. So I was able to stretch my money a long way for the medications and all that they needed that way. Now, I don't know if that's something they have in all states or whether it was just something that Virginia has or...
Yeah, that's a wonderful program, and you know, if other states don't have that kind of program, I think they should.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else, then, that you'd like to say, Nathan, about arthritis or any advice you'd like to offer the listeners?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, as we get older, and, you know, I'm 60, so, you know, I'm sort of looking at this from the point of view of a, mm-hmm. of a person that not only treats arthritis but has it as well. I think it's really important to number one, realize that it's not something you just have to live with, that most forms of arthritis are treatable, that I think all of us, as we get older, we want to stay more mm-hmm. active and
right.
more healthy than,
mm-hmm.
than our parents did. And I think it's very possible. So I guess that's the most important piece of advice I,
mm-hmm.
I can give.
Now let me ask you, you said something about when we get older and have arthritis. Is it expected that everyone as they age will have arthritis, or is it just some people?
Well, you know, unfortunately, it is probably programmed in our genetic makeup, because roughly 90% of people past the age of 50 will get arthritis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. I guess I've been lucky then, because,
yeah.
I mean, if I haven't, no one's told me, and I'm not aware of it yet, so I feel very fortunate, because I'll be 70. Well, I was just 77. And I have no known chronic illnesses, and I take no prescribed medications.
That is wonderful.
But I think that my generation had a better start in life, because there were no pesticides, no growth hormones, none of the things that tend to be toxic to people now. We grew our own fruit and vegetables, and we would kill a pig in the fall, and my mother would can it because we didn't have refrigeration. And we would kill a cow in the fall, and the food was just better. We'd go to the farm, and we'd get milk in a pail. It was unhomogenized and unpasteurized. And I wouldn't do that now, but back then I wouldn't have hesitated, and I didn't, to drink the milk that way. And so I think that the genetically modified foods now, there's just so much different that I think probably causes a lot of chronic illnesses. And I think personally, sometimes the medications that people take may cause more problems than if they didn't take them.
I agree with you on both counts. I agree that there are far too many chemicals and additives and other things that are being done to our food that we're probably not aware of.
Right.
And it's not healthy. And I think that may explain, you know, the high incidence of things like autism and
mm-hmm.
ADHD and things like that we're experiencing.
Right.
And second of all, I couldn't agree with you more about the medication,
mm-hmm.
because even though I'm a conventional physician, I'm constantly discussing with my patients
mm-hmm.
And also with myself, okay,
mm-hmm.
listen, this is what we're trying to do. Is it going to be worth this?
Right.
And so it's all, a balancing act.
Right.
And quite frankly, as I've gotten older
mm-hmm.
and hopefully wiser,
mm-hmm.
I tend to shy away from some of these chemicals and try to use, you know, more natural types of things, you know, things that I think will make more sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am a 33-year lung cancer survivor, but
oh, great.
I used natural things at that point because I was given 6 months to live, and I figured if I'm only going to live 6 months, I'm not going to be debilitated during that 6 months. So I use natural things, but the only problem I've had since is about a year ago I started getting up every hour during the night, and I felt fortunate that I got to be 76 without having that, because it's pretty common among men.
Oh, yeah.
At an earlier age, and I take herbs for that, and I get up maybe twice during the night, sometimes three times, but the herbs tend to handle it very nicely, and so I stay away as much as I can from any harsh chemicals. However, when I had a hernia, I was happy to have surgery. So,
yeah, and again, you know, you know what you're describing is that nice, healthy balance.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So, Nathan, would you like to tell us then about your products or services or things that you have and how the listeners can reach you?
Yeah, if people are interested in, you know, knowing more about arthritis, we have a lot of informational things that we distribute. You know, most of it is free. But you can contact us at the Arthritis and Osteoporosis Center of Maryland, and our phone number is 301-694-5800. On the web at www.aocm.org. And I have a couple of informational sites, www.arthritistreatmentandrelief.com, and there's hyphens between those. Great site with a lot of information. And www.tendinitistreatmenttips, again, hyphens between the words, that's .com. And you know, all that's great information on those things, and I really hope this will be of value to your listeners.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate this very much, Nathan. It's been very interesting, and I know it will be a help to the listeners. And I'm happy that I was able to have you as the person to open the arthritis series.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Carl.
Thank you.
Take care now.
You too.
Thanks.
My second guest is Kelly Rupa, who is an author, writer, and emergency management professional who was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis at age 2. She is a member of the Arthritis National Research Foundation Advisory Board and their national spokesman. This organization also named the Kelly Award for Juvenile Arthritis Research after her. Kelly is also the author of Juvenile Arthritis, The Ultimate Teen Guide, published by Scarecrow Press in March of 2009. She has written for various newspapers, magazines, and websites since she was 19 years old, including the Trenton Times and Pennington Post. She has also been featured in publications and television programs from ABC's Perspectives to the Wall Street Journal, and has been in commercials and modeling, and was introduced on Regis and Kelly. She has received several awards and has interviewed such celebrities as Dwayne Chapman of Dog the Bounty Hunter and Elizabeth Hasselbeck of The View. She can be reached through EAD and Associates at www.eadassociates.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Kelly, and I look forward to hearing what you have found successful for treating arthritis.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be on your show.
I'm looking forward to this, Kelly. You have had arthritis for a long time. Can you tell me what type of arthritis you have and how old you were when you were diagnosed?
Yes, I have juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. And I was diagnosed at the age of 2, and that was in 1982.
Mm-hmm. And what symptoms did you have?
Well, at the time, it began sort of like a flu, and I had very high fevers. I was crying a lot and that was unusual for me as a baby, according to my mother, because I had really been quite content, and so she knew there was a problem. And you know, like I said, at first it seemed like the flu until after those symptoms subsided and I began limping. So she took me to the doctor, and I was diagnosed fairly quickly as having juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, which is sort of unusual in a way, because a lot of children are misdiagnosed or go undiagnosed for a while. So I was sort of lucky in that regard.
And what interventions have you and your family tried, and which were successful and which were not?
Well, as a child, I was treated for years just with baby aspirin. And back then, they were unsure of how a lot of the treatments used on adults would affect children. And so baby aspirin was the answer. And a lot of doctors today will tell you it pained them to have to do that because it really allowed the disease to run out of control. But that was the way it was then. And so the disease really took a toll on my body, and I have a lot of joint contractures and deformities. But fortunately, as I got older, biologic drugs came available, and they sort of they altered the immune system so that, you know, in my case, I regained some function and probably in the best shape I had been. However, after a few years, even the drugs I was taking stopped working. So right now, I just began taking a new drug called Symphony, and it's a once-a-month injection, which is the first of its kind. And I'm hopeful that that will kick in and sort of jumpstart me feeling better again and bring me back to where I was, because after the other drugs stopped working, I lost a lot of mobility again.
And have your symptoms then improved at all?
I guess that they were for a time, and I was able to do things like open the front door to my house, walk up steps that were under 7 inches, and I'd never been able to do those things. And once the medicines stopped working for me, either my body was rejecting them or they had become tolerant of them, I lost that and actually began feeling much, much worse and started using a walker where it'd have to be carried around my home and just having a lot of difficulty getting around. So things still aren't great, but now that I'm on this new drug, I'm hopeful that I'll regain what I lost. But again, a lot of these biologic drugs, they don't work for everybody, or they only work for a period of time, and many of them are not approved for children. There's only a couple that are.
Now, Kelly, you are a spokesperson for the National Arthritis Research Foundation. What do you do in this role?
Well, I connected with ANRF a few years back when I was working on my book about juvenile arthritis. And since then, I've been advocating and helping to create awareness of their mission. And basically, their main goal is to raise funds and promote research to provide better treatments and hopefully even a cure for arthritis. And one thing I'm really excited about is since I've joined up with them, they established the Kelly Award for Juvenile Arthritis Research. So each year a grant will go to the scientists working on, again, a treatment or even a cure for juvenile arthritis. So really excited about that, because when you're living with the disease, it's sort of all you want to see happen sometimes.
Right, and that was a big honor for you.
Yes, very. I'm just so excited, and they recently announced that, and you know, I'm looking forward to the day the first grant is given out.
Right. Now, Kelly, is there anything else you would like to say to the audience?
Yes. One thing that I'd like people to know is that arthritis affects everyone differently, and in many cases, people living with the disease, it's not obvious that they have it. My friend Amanda White, who's mentioned in my book, to look at her, you would never know she has arthritis, but her pain isn't any less real than what I'm going through. And you know, also for many of us, arthritis pain, you know, might be okay 1 minute and really awful the next. Mm-hmm. So not every day or every hour is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of what we see on TV on these commercials for aspirin sort of undermine that. And it looks like you can just go take a couple aspirin and you're good to go. And you can be out there bowling or gardening. And often that's not the case.
Right.
A lot of us have it so severely we require many treatments.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kelly, could you tell us about your book and any services or products you have, and
sure,
how the listeners can reach you?
Well, my book is called Juvenile Arthritis, The Ultimate Teen Guide, and I wrote it as part of the latest in the series called It Happened to Me, and it's a really comprehensive guide for young people living with arthritis. And as a matter of fact, anybody with arthritis could find helpful tips in it.
Mm-hmm.
It walks you through symptoms and being diagnosed to treatments, different medicines, and including alternative therapies, physical and occupational therapy as well, and even ongoing research, as well as a lot of resources that are out there to help people living with the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that youth and their families have found it very helpful because a lot of what's out there is either outdated or just geared towards parents. So I think anybody can pick this up and find it useful. And in fact, I've had friends who don't have the disease who've learned a lot from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty enlightening. Also, information about my book can be found on my blog, which is www.kellyruba.blogspot.com. And it can be purchased on Amazon as well.
Kelly, would you spell your name?
Sure. It's KellyRuba.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. This has been very informative, Kelly, and I appreciate very much your talking with me today, and I know the listeners will appreciate what you've had to say.
Well, thank you for having me, and I want everybody to know there's 300,000 kids in the United States alone with juvenile arthritis, and it's something the public's still largely unaware of. So I appreciate your help in spreading awareness.
Thank you, Kelly.
You're welcome.
My last guest is Ms. Kristen Mahoney, a certified life balance coach and founder of Insight Out Life Coaching. She is available for one-on-one coaching, workshops, and presentations on life balance and stress management, as well as designing and implementing corporate wellness programs. Her clients have included Clif Bar, Wells Fargo, Facebook, Rotary International, San Francisco Small Business Association, and Cisco. Kristen is the author of Insights, an international monthly publication on life balance. More information is available at www.insightoutlifecoach.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Kristen, and I look forward to hearing how you have dealt with arthritis in your own life.
Thank you.
Thank you. First, what type of arthritis do you have, and how long ago was it diagnosed?
I have rheumatoid arthritis, and it was diagnosed in July, I believe, of 2005.
Mm-hmm. So it's been about 4 years.
Yeah.
And what symptoms did you have, Kirsten?
Initially, when I went to the doctor, I was having pains in my knees and having trouble walking downstairs, so I'd used the banister, and it wasn't going away.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to my primary care, and I have rheumatoid arthritis in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So they look towards that
mm-hmm.
pretty early on.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And I understand that you use a combination of both Eastern and Western interventions. And can you tell us about these?
And I have to be honest, it was almost accidental. When I first was diagnosed, I went into pretty quick denial. You know, they said I was going to need to take these medications every day, which, you know, I didn't. I was 35 years old, and I didn't want
mm-hmm.
to be taking medications every day for the rest of my life. That is never something that I thought I would have to do. So I went into pretty serious denial, and I didn't take the medications. And then the pain got worse, and I went back again, and I went on the medication that they originally recommended.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I was on them regularly for a couple of years. I'd changed doctors at one point because I wanted a doctor that I thought would be more open to more holistic medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But even the younger doctor, which, you know, my stereotype, oh, a younger doctor might be more interested in more holistic medicines. The younger doctor had no more interest in it than my original doctor.
Oh.
And throughout the process, I'd already been an acupuncture. I was just a regular person who went to acupuncture on a monthly basis. So I didn't go to acupuncture for rheumatoid arthritis, but it was treating my rheumatoid arthritis during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was probably, it was up until 2007 where I was just on Western medicine, didn't really change my food diet, didn't really change my exercise, didn't really take any herbs, tried herbs here and there, but nothing regularly. And then I went to China and lived at a Qigong meditation center
mm-hmm.
for about 4 months.
Now, was that for the arthritis or was that just something you did?
Something I chose to do.
Oh.
I felt the calling to go to China, so I went to China, and I made plans to go to China, and I found the Qigong Meditation Center that I could teach English at mm-hmm. in exchange for being there. So it was fairly accidental, although I was familiar with Qigong and familiar with it being a healing meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd done a little bit of Qigong as well. So while at the center, I was actually still on the medications and doing the Qigong, but at one point I got a severe case of vertigo. About a month into it, I got a severe case of vertigo, so I stopped taking the medication. And that's when I was in no pain and on no medication for
mm-hmm.
the next 4 months after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say I attribute it. You know, there's always so many variables, Carl, that
right,
it's hard
right.
to isolate them.
Right.
But I felt it was a combination. The weather was about 90 degrees every day where I was living in a small island off the south coast of China, and so it was the weather, the food. It was all vegetarian diet,
mm-hmm.
A little fish, lots of rice, soy, and all the and lots of vegetables, which is not my diet here.
Mm-hmm.
No dairy. So the weather, the food, and then the qigong. I was
mm-hmm.
meditating a couple of hours every day,
mm-hmm.
and I think that was a large contributor. So I was off the medication for about 3 or 4 months after that, and then the pain came back
as I was leaving
China.
Mm-hmm.
My last week in Hong Kong, the pain came back,
oh.
and I went back to the medications.
So are you on the medications now?
I am. So the medications, do you want to know what they are?
Yeah.
Okay. I take Plaquenil, the hydrochloroquine,
mm-hmm.
Also known as, and I take methotrexate.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, during the move, I just moved home, there was a lot of pain in my hand that wasn't going away. Usually my pain is fairly intermittent. I'm very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fairly mild case. I've had all the x-rays, and I have no joint damage as of now. So I try and not take too much medication if I can avoid it. But anyway, so I just recently, for the next week, will be on prednisone, which is a steroid for my one joint in my one hand that was
mm-hmm.
in considerable chronic pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because my big concern, Carlos, I don't want to have joint damage.
Right.
I can live with the pain to some extent, but if I think that I'm causing any permanent damage because I'm being stubborn
mm-hmm. right.
or because I'm denying a particular healing outlet for myself, then I wouldn't forgive myself for that.
Right, right. Now, do you do any of the supplements or the meditation or any of that now?
Yes, I meditate daily. And I think meditation has been the key to so much healing for me in many areas of my life. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
meditation. And I do a very basic 20-minute meditation
mm-hmm.
most days, you know, in a chair, nothing fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that I continue doing now.
Now, what exercises, then, do you do?
Walking is my biggest form of exercise. I have found that when I've tried to get into
mm-hmm.
more strenuous activities,
mm-hmm.
I have fatigue. I'll get fatigued, and something will not work properly
mm-hmm.
on my body.
Mm-hmm.
I'll admit that also might be an excuse.
Mm-hmm. And what about your diet now?
My diet right now is not the Chinese diet.
Right.
I've cut out of my diet a lot is dairy. I mm-hmm. used to think every meal had to have some form of cheese. So now not so much cheese, very little actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an average diet. It's not a great diet. I don't eat fast food, but you know I eat meat, chicken, not as many vegetables or fruits as would benefit me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things. If it got worse, I would. It's not bad enough. It's mm-hmm. a terrible thing to say, but it's not bad enough to make any radical changes. I'm fine going to China for 4 months, but. Mm-hmm. Changing my life all together is a lot more challenging.
Mm-hmm. And do you eat any of the nightshade vegetables?
Do you know what I do?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly tomatoes. I don't think they affect rheumatoid as much as they do osteoarthritis.
Oh.
I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't been able to isolate it
mm-hmm.
to, you know, when I've eaten a, you know, tomato-based pasta or something, I
mm-hmm.
don't feel in any more or less pain than if I didn't.
Oh.
It's unrelated to flare-up.
I was surprised yesterday. I interviewed someone, and he told me that potatoes are one of the nightshades.
Huh, potatoes.
Which I would not have thought potatoes would have been.
Uh-huh.
All potatoes except sweet potatoes, he said.
Huh. That sounds kind of familiar, yeah.
Doesn't
I'm Irish. I couldn't give up potatoes.
I don't think so, no. And so what you're doing then pretty much with the medications and all pretty much controls the pain. Is that correct or not?
Yes. Yes. For the most part.
Mm-hmm. And then if it gets worse, you'll consider some of the things you know you could do.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, you know, as much as I was seeking out
mm-hmm.
more holistic doctors,
right.
There is, you know, I have a Western mind in terms of it's easier to take a pill than to do Qigong for an hour,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I face that dilemma regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I face the dilemma regularly. That's all I can say about it.
Yeah. Is there anything else, then, you would like to say, Kirsten, before we talk about your services and products?
You know, I think it's important in terms of any healing or my healing, at least to have a support structure around it.
Mm-hmm.
So to know other people that are in my similar condition, you know, I reached out to some forums and that for people with rheumatoid arthritis, and some of it was difficult because there are folks that are in much worse condition than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been nice to find people that are in similar conditions to that, to
right.
I am. Because it's not so much what's happening now, but it's the fear of what could happen in the future.
Right, right.
So it's, to me, that's an important aspect of my own health, is to have a community of people that understand what it's like to have a chronic condition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Of any form.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, Kirsten, would you like to tell the listeners about your services, products, and also how they could reach you?
Well, my service and products are unrelated to rheumatoid arthritis, as you
mm-hmm.
probably know, but I am a life balance coach, and I work with people on having less stress and more balance in their life, which is actually, stress is a huge contributor to flare-ups. So,
right.
Yes, I suppose it is more related to
mm-hmm.
rheumatoid arthritis and other arthritises when stress is such a key component to
any
to
illness.
Our health.
The
yeah,
any
absolutely.
Illness.
Any illness. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
And how could they reach you?
They can reach me. My company is Insights Out Life Coaching, and that's Insight Out Life Coaching. And that's my website, and they can go to that. I have a monthly newsletter like yourself,
mm-hmm.
and I talk about how to live a more balanced, less stressful life in really practical ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, so I would love it if anyone wanted to join my Insight community and be part of that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Kirsten. It's been very helpful to hear from someone who actually has arthritis and can speak from point of view of having it and experiencing it and what they've done about it.
My pleasure. Thanks for offering this to people, Carl.
Thank you. Thank you, Kirsten. I hope you have enjoyed this program on arthritis and will return for more useful, traditional, and natural intervention for arthritis from a number of national experts. I would also like to invite you to my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, to look for upcoming shows and to listen to past shows aired on BBS Radio. I also have some ebooks and my book for sale on this site under store. My book, Healthy Holistic Aging, is the foundation for this show and looks at physical, mental, and spiritual health interventions, relationships, environment, and politics, all of which affect health. Using these interventions, ranging from prayer and meditation to establishing and maintaining good relationships with others, to eating a good diet and exercising, have all been shown to be useful in living a healthy, holistic aging life. I have overcome cancer myself when given a 6-month prognosis 33 years ago and have maintained a chronic illness-free and medication-free life at age 77, so this speaks well for the holistic health approach presented in my book. I wish the same for you. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a good evening.